you're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and Karen.
Good afternoon. Hi to Mai.
Hi to Mai. Today we are going to look into our biosecurity or lack of.
And Karen's, we're talking plants, by the way, or pests.
And pests. I should say. And diseases. And all those horrible things that are happening in the plant world. But Karen's also going to touch on locusts as a type of plague that has, you know, devastated around the world at this moment as we speak. And I am going to look into quarantine measures for plants. And then if we have time, we may go to our plant of the week. But we may not, because this is a huge topic. So gardeners, get your goggles on and your gloves and your...
And buckle up. We're talking biosecurity.
Yeah. Okay. So what's happening with the locusts, Karen?
Well, locusts, I don't believe they exist in New Zealand. I've never heard of a locust infestation here.
No.
Now, I believe that would be because of our isolation.
Yes.
And that would be probably the main reason, although you could probably easily transport them over if you wanted to.
No, thanks. But what do locusts feed on?
So we are kind of lucky in that sense. Well, I mean, they're not fussy eaters. I've learnt a lot about the locust. Locusts are a plague of biblical scope, really, in 2020.
Yep.
Okay. Why? And what are they exactly? That's the title of my excerpt today. I did a bit of research and thought, well, I went to the most recent article I could find on this topic, and it was on a rather interesting website called Goats and Soup or something like that. Very informative. And a man by the name of Pranav Bhaskar, he wrote a very informative article. I presume he's a journalist, on the 14th of June this month. So it's very relevant. And so this information is really up to date, and I think some people will find it very interesting. Titanic swarm. So I just basically cut and paste a lot of what he wrote. So I'm just, because I couldn't make it any better.
Just read it.
So Titanic swarms of desert locusts are currently descending ravenously on the Horn of Africa. The Horn of Africa, I don't know the continent that well. I've been to South Africa. Have you been to any areas? Oh, and maybe the top, like Middle East.
No.
The Horn of Africa's on the east side.
Okay.
It's like a little bit of a horn at the top.
Oh, yeah.
They are literally flattening farms in an unprecedented threat to food security. And on the ground, farmers can do nothing but watch, staring up with horror and at their fields in dismay. So this is happening right now. Locusts have actually been around since at least the time of the pharaohs of ancient Egypt, 3200 BC. Now, I don't know if they take that just because it was written in the Bible. Maybe they have found... I don't think this guy would have just written that based on biblical evidence.
Oh, there would be archaeological evidence.
So they've been around a while, and they can multiply to billions and then just like that vanish again. So they booms and busts. That's how it works in the cicada world. If the 2020 version of these marauders stays steady on its warpath, the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization says desert locusts compose a threat to the livelihoods of 10% of the world's population. The peril may already be underway. Early June projections of the FAO, that's the Food and Agricultural Organization, are forecasting a second generation of spring-bred locusts in eastern Africa, giving rise to new powerful swarms of locust babies capable of wreaking even more havoc. So I thought, well, here, let's just discuss a few things that we need to know about locusts in order to understand why these little invaders are such a big deal. There can be a lot of confusion about what exactly a locust is. To the average eye, it's easy to mix up the critters with cicadas and crickets.
Mm-hmm.
The simple answer, though, is that locusts are a very special kind of grasshopper.
Yep, that's what I thought. Little grasshoppers.
Yeah. So what makes a locust a locust? Apparently it comes down to a superpower possessed by locusts that enables them to go through a remarkable switch in development. Most of the time, locusts exist in their grasshopper phase. They lead solitary lives. They're green and pretty and unremarkable. And nobody really notices them. But when environmental conditions are right, usually when there's lots of rainfall and moisture, something dramatic happens. They are increased in numbers, and as they do so, they sense one another around them. This is what biologists call the gregarious phase of the locust. The creatures undergo a remarkable transformation. They change their physiology. Their brain changes, their coloration changes, so they go from green to yellow or brown, brownish yellowish. Their body size changes, and instead of repelling one another, they become attracted to one another. And if these conditions persist in the environment, they start to march together in coordinated formations across the landscape. The ability to change dramatically like this in response to environmental conditions is called phenotypic plasticity. Now, where have we heard that word before?
Oh, yes, I remember that word.
Coral.
Coral, yes.
There are many species that exhibit this. Yeah, so it's crazy. They're a crazy little threat.
Or maybe they're working for the good of locusts everywhere. They're uniting.
For the well-being of all. So the swarms are most intense in East African countries, and data from the FAO's Desert Locust Watch documents, it's a thing.
Okay.
Obviously it's a major issue there, so they've got to, you know, watchdogs out there. They say documents are showing that it's steadily worsening and is heading across Southwest Asia and the Middle East to Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Uganda and Iran. So it's spreading across the borders now. Experts say the upsurge is likely to be tied to the extreme weather events such as the powerful cyclones in 2018, which dumped water in Oman, Yemen and the Horn of Africa. The wet conditions have persisted, creating ideal bug breeding conditions.
Okay.
So that's what's happening. And once they enter the gregarious phase, a generation of locusts can multiply 20-fold every 3 months. So when they boom, they do so exponentially, and that's when things start getting really out of hand. Wow.
Just like a certain virus.
Yeah. Just what we need, right?
Yeah.
So these countries are really, really feeling right now. They ride the winds. They're migratory pests. So, yeah, and they ride the winds, crisscrossing swathes of land.
They're huge and they block out the sun if they all get together. They're just, you can't see anything.
They especially love cereal grain crops, but are not fussy, and these are planted extensively across Africa. They're powerful long-distance flyers, so they can easily go plus 100 kilometres in a 24-hour period. They can easily move across countries in a matter of days. In 1988, swarms of originating locusts in North Africa crossed the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, not on a plane, but just by themselves.
Hope they remembered their boarding passes.
Oh, gosh.
And they certainly didn't put themselves into self-quarantine.
No.
That not for us.
Nah.
We're going to go eat stuff.
Yeah. What did they find across the Atlantic?
They made it to the Caribbean and South America, so there's lots of yummy things over those ways. So projections show that the current locust populations are poised to spread all the way from eastern to western Africa by July.
Oh dear. And what's being put in place to stop them?
Okay, I'm so glad you asked that. How are countries fighting locusts? A general lack of cash at the moment. Isn't it always? Throw money at them. Yeah, take the cash.
Don't take it.
Just take it and run. They'll probably eat it and then continue on their way. But that, along with competing priorities and domestic challenges, makes it very hard to mount a long-range pest management strategy Right now, the most effective way to fight outbreaks involves mass aerial sprays. Yuck.
I don't think that's a good idea.
But emerging technologies may hold promise for the future, guys. So it's not all doom and gloom. For example, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration recently partnered with the United Nations to repurpose technology used to track smoke plumes from fires to predict the migrations of locusts.
Oh, okay.
And they think that this is, I don't know.
I thought you were going to say they were smoking them out with incense or something.
Well, I mean, I don't know why I said it was a huge hope, but because it got me thinking, I was thinking it's still pesticide all the way. The FAO, I've already forgotten the something organisation, Food and Agriculture Organisation, has already raised $300 million it expects just to get the deliveries going of the pesticides, because they were all put on delay. So this is where all the money's being poured into chemical. The smoke plume thing, yeah. I mean, like, what are you going to do? So if we could see them coming, whatever the satellite showed, that we had swarms heading towards the North Island, what are you going to do?
Birds come and eat them.
Kiwis.
There's locusts. Oh, yeah, kiwis, tillies.
Put up huge nets,
chickens.
Cover the entire, like, you know.
Because birds eat locusts. They'd have a feast.
Where are all the birds?
I mean, if they weren't all poisoned at first with all the pesticides.
It's a yuck situation, and I know it's not a nice, happy topic. That's why my plan of the week was sweet pea, because I thought I needed to do something sweet. But, they are a real threat, and not they're a very real threat to our food security. The world. So I'm not just talking New Zealand. They're ravenous eaters. An adult desert locust that weighs 2 grams can consume roughly its own weight daily. That's just disgusting.
Are they eating, because there's huge crops and fields of monocultures, that they can just run through it just like that?
They'll kill up to 80% of most crops.
But if they were confronted with a garden with many different varieties of plants, would they be able to devastate that as much as, like,
I don't know. Crops. That's an interesting thought.
Fields of just one plant.
Yeah, maybe there's something out there that they're just like, yuck, don't like. But they sound a bit like your typical ferocious garden pest, like slugs and snails. They just seem to eat
anything in their
path. Green things, I don't know, maybe not cereals, but it's just like, they can be really difficult. Imagine a swarm of slugs. You know, I've seen on the farm back in the days when I was a youngster, we had a snail infestation once go through the maize crop. That was interesting. I've never seen so many snails.
And how much maize was planted in your... Was there heaps of them?
Probably about 30 acres.
And just one plant maize?
Would have been one, maybe two.
Well, no wonder, because they see all that food there in one place, they're just going to go.
Mum was going around with, like, slug pellets.
Oh, well, that's not going to do anything.
I suppose that's what they're doing on a mass effect, is just throwing chemicals at them. But I just said that little box of slug pellets, I just had I was like, yeah, you're going to need a few of those.
What can slug pellets compete against yummy maize? I don't know.
I think she was just desperate, but it was so weird how it can happen just almost overnight. A large locust outbreak, which started in 2003 and lasted to 2005 in Africa, found that children who grew up during this period were much less likely to go to school, and girls were disproportionately affected. They reckon, it has all these social effects as well.
Well, talking about that, I'm just going to focus on what New Zealand has already had to deal with and how we deal with things. So in case the locusts ever come here, or any other kind of threat. I have this list on plant diseases and threats that have come into the country, and there's quite a long list. So I'll just go through them and see if you remember any of these. Okay.
Yeah.
So for bees, we had Variomite.
Oh, yes.
And then for plants, we had myrtle rust that threatened our pentacower and
feature. Is that still around, though?
Yeah, that's still here. If you see any with it, you have to report it. We had PSA virus that affected our kiwi fruit.
Yeah.
We had a busy lizzie, sort of an outbreak of, I'm not actually sure, it affected them and they weren't allowed to be sold in the country for a time. We had Dutch tulips get this virus that affected the, this was not just in New Zealand but worldwide, and they... it affected the colours of the flowers, and so all that industry sort of collapsed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We had mosaic virus for peas. And those,
I've heard of the mosaic virus.
Peas couldn't be bought or sold because, they were affected. Not in New Zealand, but worldwide, and especially Ireland, they had potato blight, which contributed to the famine. In England, they had Buxus blight affecting the Buxus plants, you know, those hedges.
Oh, yeah.
And we have to look out for that if it ever comes
was
here.
Was that in England?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Not the hedging, darling.
No. more close to home, apple moth.
Oh.
Remember that?
Yes, and I remember all the spray on everything as well. I remember coming out of work one day and I was like, what is all that stuff all over my car?
And it stunk. Yeah.
God, it was terrible.
And in recent times, fruit fly from Australia.
Oh, yeah. I believe we may have that one under control.
Closer to home, Koldi dieback disease, still looking out for that.
But that didn't... come into the country via the border, though, did it? Do you reckon?
I think it's just polluted water. And Dutch elm disease. And also, the last two on the list, wilding conifers.
Oh.
You know what they are, aren't they?
Yes, I've discussed those before.
And the very first one that the New Zealand government was dealing with was... codlin moth for the apples.
Oh, yeah.
And so they passed an act in 1884 to deal with, no one was allowed to bring any unapproved apple into the country.
Yeah.
So they had this customs set up, and there were actually quarantine islands where goods would stay for a certain amount of period before they could come into New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, as New Zealand was being settled by the Pākehā and all this new stuff was coming in, plants and animals, they had these societies called acclimatisation societies because they wanted to bring, you know, all their familiar plants here and grow them and see if they would, you know.
So they had an awareness of biosecurity back then.
Yep.
That's interesting.
And before aviation.
But it didn't seem to work because we've still got all these things.
It was
gorse
all...
gorse and...
Yeah, gorse.
I mean, look. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gorse isn't so bad if it doesn't take over. It actually can be quite useful.
It's just the conditions, as you said, with the locusts. They like the warm conditions. And just depending on the type of... plant that comes in, it can go crazy if it really likes it.
Or if you plant gorse everywhere where you farm.
Yeah.
Yeah, or blackberry. That was always a good one. Oh, let's have a blackberry hedge, how lovely. Which is great until you want to, actually move it. Or your horse tries jumping it and then you end up getting thrown off into it.
Is that from experience?
Yes. The horse went, nope. I'm not going near that.
Okay, so before aviation, we had all the jet planes. It was all brought in by ship. So they would dock and quarantine on some islands off the coast of New Zealand. And I have a little list of islands that they did.
Yeah.
It's only four on the list. So in Auckland, we had Motuihe Island.
I was wondering if Motuihe, because I... tree planted on there, and yeah, they talked about
that was used as quarantine.
They had the building or the some of the remnants are still there of the. I remember when you said acclimatisation. They also had patients there were not well.
Yes,
with certain you know, white people's diseases, they would quarantine them there. They seem to do quite well, better than I feel like. Look, I shouldn't say that. We've done pretty well with the COVID thing.
With Wellington, they had Matui Island or Soames Island, so they've got an island as well. There was Quail Island, that's off Christchurch or Littleton, and there was even in Otago, Quarantine Island.
Ah.
They called it Quarantine Island.
What that could have been.
So we had that, and anything that was coming off the ships had to be checked for anything. So even like timber would be checked for termites and insects, and then that was quite thorough, which I'm not sure is the case these days. And they would spray everything on arrival, and in the 50s and 60s, they'd even spray DDT on everything before it was allowed into the country.
That explains so much.
Fumigated. And even passengers were fumigated. Like they said, if you come into the country, you have to be sprayed on everything. That sort of...
I think I remember that. They still used to spray the plane...
Yeah.
Not that long ago.
Well, they still do.
They do,
but they
yeah.
don't spray the passengers. That's the thing.
I remember being in there when they... This must have been years ago when they were spraying the whole... Maybe it was just air freshener.
Oh.
I don't know, but it was, like, weird.
But these days, passengers must declare everything. So fruit, soil, you have to wipe your boots, you have to empty bags.
It's amazing how many people want, like... bring things into the country, like, yeah, a lot of people do it, a lot.
Yeah.
Not just like, oh, the naughty smuggler bringing in. Like, my mother-in-law brought in all this bag of fruit and pineapple
my
and this. Yeah, your mum would probably do the same.
Bring
yeah.
in food that we didn't
I
have
think,
here.
Actually, I think I have too. I have, by accident. I was like, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those souvenirs you think, like, oh, yeah, just this... bone or whatever, or dried flowers, it could be harbouring diseases.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
But that's why border security is so important. Because if they don't check everything, like, something could get in. And, I don't know, you've been overseas and at airports and coming through Auckland, and do they always check everyone?
Well, I think a lot of stuff's actually coming in on shoes and stuff as well.
No one's asked to wipe their shoes.
Yeah. Like,
no one's...
Because someone was actually saying, you know, even the coronavirus, everyone's busy focusing on their hands and their face, whereas not a lot of people were saying, you know, it's on their shoes as well. So you walk everywhere, you take your shoes off, da-da-da-da, you know.
So when you come into the country from overseas, well, my experience is... after you check in your passport and your bags and everything, you're just free to go. You don't even need to stay at the airport for a day or so just to, you know, settle or be tested for anything.
Maybe we could just irradiate everyone. It's a dumb thing because they do that to certain food. Oh, I don't know if you can do it to people. I know you can do it to items. Ranging from medical equipment to foods.
Karen, everyone that comes off the plane has to have chicken soup for their meal at the airport, and they have to stay there till, I don't know, a couple of days until they're free to go.
Yeah, maybe that should just be a part of the whole travelling into New Zealand is you have these huge areas where you just hang out. And they take your clothes and they're washed or irradiated or whatever, and then you just hang out by the pool.
Great
have
Barrier
a few cocktails,
Island maybe could be a
wait it out for a couple of days. That just becomes
normal,
like the norm. While they I think that would probably be quite cool.
Okay, we've come up with a solution, everyone.
I love solutions, especially good ones.
So the reason why it's not being done much anymore is because the sheer volume of goods and people and plants and animals coming in, that they're understaffed, and they don't think it's feasible to check every single little thing that comes into the country.
Yeah.
And what they do is crazy. Do it on a risk-based analysis and try to manage the risk when it does come in. But did you
it's
know...
It's like trying to swat a flea with a fly swatter, isn't it? It's like, and that's what I feel like, and I just sometimes feel like, you know, all these things have come in, but I'm sure, like, you know, even with this virus, you know, there'll be something good comes out of it. I don't know. Mm. Like, I feel like if everything, all these moths are going to come over and eat, you know, pears and apples, there'll be one breed or something, an alternative. Or, you know, like, yep. I just feel like if we just kind of let things be. But it is sad because there are things that are lost forever. Mm. I mean, I'm very fearful of what's going to happen to our Cody's.
Yeah.
You know, and there's been... And what was that other one that died, that lovely flower that was everywhere for a while there?
Oh, Busy Lizzie?
Is that the one? Yeah, I think it was Busy Lizzie. I just had some in my garden, like, 5 years ago. Now it's gone forever, I'm told. Like...
Yeah, because they're at risk of catching whatever it is.
It is sad, and you know, you want to...
You can't grow kiwi fruit now because you just can't find it anywhere because they can't be sold.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Just want to touch on some quarantine measures that plants have to go through. They do, if anyone's importing any plants, they do need to go into a quarantine process, especially new ones to the country.
Oh, yeah.
So they have these special labs set up, and they're all dotted around the country. In Auckland, we have a few labs and facilities with greenhouses where they are parked in for a couple of months and monitored and tested. So in Auckland, we have a Tucker's Orchid Nursery in Bayswater, and we have Life Tech Laboratories in Albany. Mm-hmm. So they do with level 2, and there's even level 3. For plants, which is the same plant. There's a plant health and environment lab in Morrins Road in St. John's.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, even plants have level 2s and level 3s.
Yeah, and like, so if you've got plants that are maybe susceptible to spores or something that's easily spread, they'd be like up the level.
They do all the testing. It's not cheap, though.
Oh, no, I'd imagine not.
Yeah. And there was, if you go to the biosecurity website, there's all this list of, like, things you have to go through, all the customs and all the regulations and all the...
Oh, yeah, if you want to get a plant into the country.
Yeah, yeah. And so they say 3 months for potatoes, 9 months for blueberries, 16 months quarantine.
Is that for people wanting to get certain breeds in and things like that? Okay, well, then that would be worth it. If you just, like, you know, order a bag of potatoes online... Be like, 3 months later, you end up with, like, sprouting.
Yeah.
No, okay. So, these are for specific.
Yeah. There are people in lab coats testing all the time. We don't want diseases coming into
that's good.
Our country. So there you go.
Oh, well, I think I don't think we're going to have time to do Sweet Pea today, but you know what? There's always next week, Selena.
Oh, we're going to have a Sweet Pea extravaganza.
Yeah, no, it's a nice one, nice plant. So something to look forward to, guys. Make sure you tune in.
Yeah, report any locusts coming in.
Yes, definitely. Email us. You better check the emails, Selena. Yes. Could be important.
Yeah, check everything. Have a good thing, everyone.
See you later.
Bye. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page, or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.